Here we go.
Welcome to BP WrigleyCast, the Cubs podcast that looks at the game from both the analytical and the fans' point of view. Today I'm joined by Isaac and Ryan. Joel is not here. He's actually going to the opening of a new bondage place near his house. So, you know, good luck with that, Joel. Hope you enjoy it. But we will start with Joel in spirit with kind of an idea he came up to kickstart the first show of the second half, and that's to kind of look at three different parts of the second half, and kind of split in the following way: what we hope to see in the second half, what we're afraid we'll see in the second half, and what we think we'll actually see in the second half. So I'll just go ahead and get started with what I hope to see. And obviously hope to see the Cubs, win more games than they lose. But when it comes down to it, I think what I'm looking for is winning series. And I've been thinking a lot about this lately in terms of, I'm already jumping ahead to the playoffs and what the Cubs need to do to succeed in the playoffs, any moves that they might need to make to succeed in the playoffs. And it really comes down to being able to win a series of games, whether it's best of five or best of seven. So I'd like to see them do that consistently. I'd like to see some domination on some of these wins. You know, they're not going to win every single game, but when they do get a win and hopefully win, more series, I want to see some domination. I want to see some just complete and utter, the pitching dominate, the offense scoring a bunch of runs, just kind of alleviating some of that tension we got as the first half was wrapping up. And obviously, don't want to see any crushing losses. You don't want to see any blown saves, anything that makes you lose your faith, the faith in that bullpen and in clutch situations. So. That's what I'm hoping to see. Curious to hear what you guys think. And of course, welcome to the podcast. I feel like I just talked for like 5 minutes straight there. So hey guys, how's it going?
Hey Carlos. I think what you just said about what you hope to see, that's kind of where I am with it. The way I took hope to see is what's my best case scenario, and I think what it is everybody gets healthy and the Cubs end up with the best record in the National League, and game one there's Jake Arrieta, starting at Wrigley Field and in the NLDS. I think that's what I hope to see.
Yep, and I think that first of all, good evening, gentlemen. I guess you want to see domination, which goes right along with, I'm sure, what Joel would want to see, given where he is tonight. So,
touche.
I think what I hope to see is consistent starting pitching. What we saw in the first three months of the season was stratospherically good starting pitching, and I don't think we can continue to see that. So I'm hoping that we see steady, solid, consistently above average pitching.
Yeah, I mean that's crazy, right? Because you look at those first half numbers and just looking at them, everything looks like it went great, but it's all about how they're going to continue in the second half. No, if any injuries, if they're going to have to call on some younger player to come and step in. I mean, I don't know what the numbers are on this, but I know it's very rare to have a five-man rotation just go all the way through to the end of the season. So I'm sure we'll see somebody else stepping in.
Yeah, and right now we've seen a five-man rotation all but one start, which was Adam Warren's spot start. So like you said, that's avoiding injuries is key, and it's very rare. But I said at the beginning of the year that I thought this pitching staff was somewhat impervious to injury as individuals. So I think we'll continue to see that. I just don't want to see him get worn down. That's my big thing. And actually, I'll save that for scared we'll see in a moment. But I'll leave it with Ryan on think we'll see.
All right, so what I think we will see is kind of what I just said. I think we're going to see the Cubs get the best record in the National League. I think that they're going to get healthy, and I think we're going to see further development from guys like Wilson Contreras, and I think Albert Almora is about to go back down to AAA, but he's going to come back up in September. I think you're going to see more development from that guy, and I think It's going to be a lot of positives for the Cubs heading into the playoffs. I'm staying away from the Joel answer. Everyone's going to get hurt, and the rotation, Arrieta's arm's going to fall off. That's my Joel impression.
Sounds like a proper Englishman with a slight accent.
It's not bad. You're doing him really, really well. Good justice.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I think from my point of view, I think what we will see is I think the offense will kind of kick it back into gear. There's so many players here that can contribute offensively. We still haven't seen much from Jason Hayward. So I think the offense is going to just become a little more steady, a little more reliable. In terms of the pitching, I mean, I don't know. I'm an optimist usually, but I just can't see the season ending with the numbers that these guys are putting up all the way through the end of the season. So I think we'll see some correction there. Nothing drastic, I don't think, but I think we will see numbers kind of not be as sharp as it were in the first half.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I do think that there's still more to be seen from the offense, especially from guys like Jason Hayward and maybe Javi Baez and Addison Russell. I think the best is yet to come still for those guys. So I think we could see actually maybe a better offensive second half. But I agree with you on the pitching. And with that, I'll just roll right into scared we'll see. And I'm scared that we'll see serious regression continue in the pitching, in the starting pitching especially. Reason being is that they set the bar so high in the first half, and I do think that they got maybe a bit worn out. And we've worn out the topic of talking about maybe Joe Maddon extending their appearances too long, and I've said my piece on that far too many times. But in general, I don't think they're the pitching staff they were in July, but I also don't think that they're the pitching staff that they were from April through June. So what I'm scared we'll see is just regression for a guy like Arrieta, who maybe has had trouble throwing strikes, though tonight was encouraging, and regression for Hendricks, who might start to get hit harder if he doesn't locate perfectly, and Jason Hamill in the second half has had some woes. So that's definitely my scared to see is what the starting pitching might do in the last 2.5 months.
And I'm not so much scared about that, just because I feel like the regression we've seen, a lot of it is, Jason Hamill's not the guy who's going to give up 8 home runs to the Mets. Yeah, that's not who he is. I mean, he may not be great, but I think we're seeing a lot of signs from him that maybe the second half swoon may not be happening. He looked, as far as the way his pitches moved, which was a lot of the key last year, he looked a lot better in his last outing. So I'm not expecting a huge drop-off from that guy. Hamill's your number 5 starter, and that's, that means he's probably not starting a playoff game. The only big question I really have from the remaining starters is what John Lackey are we going to see? And at this point, no matter what he does the rest of the year, Lackey's already talked about how the big boy games aren't until October. So if he ends the year with a 4 ERA, we're still running him out there in game 4 because he's John freaking Lackey. So there's really just, I mean, I'm not concerned about Lester. There's a track record there. Arrieta looked fantastic tonight. There's really just a lot to be concerned about with in regards to regression.
Yeah, I agree with you, especially the Lackey comment about October. That's really what it's all about. So in terms of what I'm afraid to see is I guess I'd say it in one word. I'd say turnover, and I guess that includes, major injuries. Obviously, that's always something that you scares you. That could disrupt a lot. Now, the team is built to kind of, not accommodate for, but, it's built to get by with the talent that it has to kind of make up for it. I'm a little bit, as we keep hearing about all these trade scenarios and who are they going to target and who are they going to bring up, this team seems to be, it's a good team and they work well together. They play well together. They all like each other. I guess one of the smaller issues that I'm afraid we'll see is just new blood coming in. And I guess specifically I'm thinking here of a guy like Chapman, or any other player that's coming in from the outside that maybe doesn't fit in, as well as these guys already fit in with each other and know each other and play well together. And maybe it's not even an issue because, you know, we saw Almora and Contreras come up and you know, they fit right in, no problem. So maybe it's just me overthinking it.
Well, yeah, and I'll tease this for a little bit later. We're going to talk a little bit about, trade stuff and, Chapman being a part of that conversation because he is on the trade market and the Yankees are pretty desperate to get something for him before free agency. But I don't know necessarily that the Cubs are going to go that route. And I know we'll dive deeper into that later, but that's adding somebody in general to the locker room that may not be the best guy. I don't know that that's such a big deal. At least I'll say it this way, not to the players. I don't think, in a room of 25 guys plus coaches, I don't really think, maybe somebody across the room has a checkered past. You know what? We don't know any of these people personally. All we know is what's out in the media. We know what we've heard about Chapman. How many of those guys already in the locker room have a checkered past that we don't know about or did something bad? I mean, I think as much as we decry clubhouse mentality, that's what it is for them. Once you get in there, anything outside there is kind of over. It's just what you do in that room with those people. So
tune in next week when Ryan Davis goes undercover to the Chicago Cubs clubhouse to get some dirt.
I thought you were going to say tune in next week when Ryan's been fired.
Well, we still got plenty of time on this episode, so.
Yeah, that's true. I still have plenty of time to get fired. We normally fire Isaac, don't we?
Yeah, they keep trying. I'm not sure why. I literally just got a paycheck like 10 minutes ago, so I'm not sure what happened.
Really bad.
Yeah. Friends with the owner or something. I think, Carlos, it's a fair point, and it's interesting that you asked that because you weren't privy to this, but earlier in the day I asked Ryan on Twitter DM, I said, if it meant for sure that he would assist us in taking us to a World Series this year, the Cubs, of course, would you trade for Aroldis Chapman? Would you be on board with a trade for Aroldis Chapman? And Ryan gave basically exactly the same answer to me that he just gave to you, which was, hey, look, there's a lot of these guys that may have a checkered past. And I do get that and I do understand that, but I also think that Theo and Jed will be very, very sensitive to not tipping the apple cart, per se, with a bad apple. And I think that will be part of their equation, is they'll want to dig very deep on anybody that they bring in with maybe other players that have played with them or close to them to see what kind of people they are and how they think they will fit into that clubhouse. Because I think that's one of the strongest things this team has going for them, is there's a vibe and a genuine friendship among a lot of these players that even reporters are talking about. And I think that's really special and it's a little bit rare. And I think it really helps this team.
Yeah, and I have to be clear about this. So people don't take that answer that you gave for me so eloquently, that I'm not concerned from the player's standpoint about accepting a player into the locker room that may have had a checkered past or a violent history. As far as Theo and Jed go, I think it's pretty clear that they, in fact, I wrote a piece today with a whole bunch of quotes from those guys in it where they even said they count a really big portion of what they do into the human element and what kind of people they are. And they raved about Anthony Rizzo today, talking about what kind of person he is and why they've acquired him after drafting him in Boston. Then Jed acquired him in San Diego, and then when he came to the Cubs, he acquired him from San Diego, is because even when people were down on Rizzo after his call up to San Diego, where he struggled and people thought, oh, his bat speed's not great and he can't hit the fastball and he needs to shorten up, all these things. They knew the kind of person he was, and they knew that if anybody could make those adjustments, he could. So I absolutely think that Jed and Theo are looking at that kind of stuff and seeing, does this guy have the personality that fits in our locker room? And if they do decide that there is somebody that they feel like would fit in, I have no worries about them actually fitting in with the Cubs.
Well, I think that's a good point in terms of not messing with that chemistry and knowing a player, right? As much as you get your advanced scouts out there to talk to, look at players and talk to other players on what they think of guys on other teams, the players you know best are the ones in your organization. So you know, let's talk about that. Some of the stuff you had talked about, Ryan, and that I believe you wrote about in terms of if the Cubs are going to do something, the front office is kind of has kind of said some things that make us believe that where they're going to start is from the inside, from those players that they already have in the organization. So if you want to like speak on that a little bit.
Yeah, I put together a piece for a different site today about some comments that Jed and Theo made today, and I'll read a couple of them because I think they're interesting. They talked about how they're going to improve the roster and the ways they're looking at it, and they basically said the phone's ringing and they're talking, but a quote that Jed said here is, I think our philosophy has been you want to be aggressive in the moment, but at the same time, you have to realize that the idea of this is the season or going all in is exceptionally dangerous in our sport because you're probably only increasing your odds by a little bit with any one move to win the World Series. I think any one move is unlikely to shift your odds as much as people probably think it might shift them. If you want to be aggressive, you want to address your weaknesses, but you also want to be aware that the best way to win the World Series is simply by getting to the playoffs every single year. He goes on to make other comments about, that was Jed, this one's Theo. He says, we trust our guys, they're high character players, and they're extremely talented. We're going to do our part to try and improve things, but we trust these guys. Then they go on to talk about internal improvement, where Theo specifically brings up Brian Matthews and Joe Nathan. He says that they are good examples of guys who are pitching their way into position where if they can continue their success at the big league level, they can help us. He even says Trevor Cahill was one of our better relievers last year in the postseason, and this time last season he was getting released from his second club out of Double-A. So, and there's a lot more in the piece that really kind of leans this way. I think it's a really, really good chance that Jed and Theo are looking, number one, to see what they have within the organization to fill spots in the bullpen. And number two, maybe look at waiver wire transactions, guys like Fernando Rodney last year. And I think last case scenario, if a deal blows them away, they might make a trade. But I don't really see at this point, unless they get real desperate or a great deal drops in their lap, I don't see them going out and grabbing a guy like Andrew Miller or Aroldis Chapman.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I tend to agree with that. I think that they will make a move for a left-handed reliever. I don't think it will be one of those two guys because, first of all, I believe what the Yankees are asking the Cubs right now is totally unreasonable. I think they'll let those deals go by the wayside. But I think the point about incremental improvement in the playoffs is really important here. And that's kind of the point that I've been arguing with fans lately, is that a guy like Andrew Miller, and I'm just throwing out numbers here, I'm not doing any predicting or anything like that, but I mean, he maybe takes your World Series odds today from 15% to 15.5% or something like that. So there's just simply not the, you know, gravitas leap that most people might think there is when you're making a deal like that. And there's no question you're going to give up a piece that's going to hurt. So I am not in the camp of wanting to make a move like that. I think that deadline deals are always seller's markets, and I don't want to buy anything in a seller's market, whether it's baseball or in life. So I'd like to stay away from that. I'd like to see a lower profile move for a lefty that's solid out of the bullpen. And then the internal improvements are important. And I want to hear, Carlos, your thoughts on this before we move sort of to some of the Iowa stuff. But what are your thoughts on what you think they'll do with the bullpen at the deadline?
I mean, it's interesting because I feel like, for one, you know, the stuff that some of the words that they're using right now and the comments that they're, as you were reading them, Ryan, I was thinking, geez, I wonder how much of this is meant for the current players' ears, you know, to hear that, hey, no, man, you guys got it. You guys are our guys. We don't need to bring anybody in. Yeah, I get it, whether it's for them or not, or if it's genuinely, hey, this is how we feel. I mean, I think they proved that last year at the deadline where, you know, they made these incremental improvements. But it's just interesting how the way we're talking about this and the way the front office is talking about it, I think we're kind of nodding our heads going, yep, that makes sense. It's the difference between a team that, you know, tries to go for it and sacrifices some of that longer term, you know, continual You know, Theo Epstein's talked about it. We want to be good for a long time, and you want to get to the playoffs over and over and over, and that's the best way of increasing your odds of winning the World Series. And that all makes sense to us, but I try to put myself in the fans' point of view of, gosh, we have such a good team right now. Why not just go and grab this guy who's going to, you know, whether it's somebody like Chapman or Miller or whatever, somebody that can just dominate an inning, right? And like you said, maybe it is 15% to 15.5% where your odds are just going up a little bit. But I understand how a fan could say, what? Why wouldn't you make this move? You're going to go and call up Brian Matthews? Like, who's that? So I see both sides of it. And I think from my perspective, it's, yes, I want to see this team go to the playoffs this year, next year, the year after that. But it's still hard to not jump on that bandwagon of like, ooh, yeah, let's go get a big name to kind of feel more confident when we do get to the playoffs.
Yeah, and I understand that really well. And I'd be the first to tell you as a fan, I would get caught up. If you told me tomorrow the Cubs acquired Andrew Miller and didn't give up anything off the 40-man roster, let's say, or the major league roster, I would be thrilled. That would be fantastic. But at the same time, I'm really on the side of internal improvement and looking at those kind of waiver wire deals and how the Cubs have kind of, to fill out their bullpen since they arrived, just kind of thrown as many arms at it as possible and kind of see what sticks. So I guess the way I would say it is that kind of old phrasing of, you know, for a general manager or a team president like Theo, you know, if you start thinking like a fan, you end up sitting with them. And and I think, yeah, if they think, and they have all the numbers about that would tell you, you know, exactly how it raises your chances of winning in the playoffs, if they think that it's a 15 to a 15.5% chance by going out and grabbing a guy like that, I would probably rather see what Brian Matthews and Joe Nathan have and call up Gerardo Concepcion. That was easy for me to say. Call up those guys and see who you can pair with what they have right now. Because right now, I think they've got Hector Rondon, they've got Pedro Strop and Travis Wood, and I think C.J. Edwards is going to be going down there. So if you can get one or two more guys, that's a good bullpen.
Well, it's interesting when we were on Slack and you were, you know, mentioning this idea that maybe we should talk about these, the focus on internal improvements before going out and getting someone. I jotted down drinking their own Kool-Aid ? And I kind of vacillate between agreeing with the front office, but because I seem to always be agreeing with them, which I think is a good sign that you trust their moves and that they've shown that they can be, you know, they're in line with the kind of thinking that we have on the team. But then I get angry at myself and say, no, Carlos, you can't always agree with them. You have to, otherwise one day they're gonna totally fool you, right? Which is nonsensical, but that's who we are. And so I'm wondering, like, to say that we don't need to go outside the team, and that's why I think something you said, Isaac, I'm kind of thinking of when you said, I think they're going to go after somebody on another team, but it's not going to be one of those big names. I think that makes sense to me, because for you to say, hey, we made a whole bunch of moves before the season started, and maybe a few smaller moves as the season began, and we think we solved for every possible scenario until we get to the playoffs is a little, I don't know, maybe overconfident. So I think it's time to assess at this point, all right, well, what do we got? What do we need? What did we miss? You know, even if it's a minor bullpen piece, you know, or what could we improve? Maybe we didn't miss it, but we just want to be that much better. I think it makes sense to go out and get somebody to help with that.
Yeah, there's a lot there. You touched on a lot of really interesting points. The one I want to start with is Theo and Jed, and you said, Ryan, you said if you start thinking like a fan, you'll be sitting with them. And I think one of the most interesting things about this front office is they don't make any moves thinking about their job. And that is an incredibly powerful position to be in.
That's a good point.
It's the opposite of Gar Forman and John Paxson, where every move that they make is thinking about trying to keep their job through this season, which means that it's detrimental to the long term, and they're trying to win 40 games this year. So,
are you saying that Dwayne Wade is not really helping them get better and closer to winning a championship?
I'll let you parse that however you would like to parse that. But it's interesting because they're making these moves because they believe they are absolutely the best move for the franchise. However, I think that the downside of this sort of job security that they have is exactly what you just said, Carlos, which is it could possibly put you in a position where you are a little too fond of yourself and you are a little too fond of your own moves and your own players and your own organization. And we traded for C.J. Edwards, and that was the Matt Garza trade, and we're proud of that trade. And we have these three guys that are contributing from that. And we stole Trevor Cahill from the dumpster bin for a dollar and all these other things that make them geniuses. You do have to be a little bit careful to make sure you can still see around your own head. And from that standpoint, I think it's a very salient point of what you just brought up to say, hey, they need to make sure they stay grounded here and don't view all of their own previous moves as definitely being enough. Now, I believe that they can. I believe that there's a level of humility with those guys that will allow them to do that. But I'm also really intrigued by Ryan's thoughts here on the internal improvements. And part of the reason for that is I was in Iowa this weekend covering the Iowa Cubs, and it just so happened that I was able to talk to both Joe Nathan and Brian Mattis. And Nathan was phenomenal. And when I saw him pitch, I was very impressed with his stuff. He touched 94, and his off-speed stuff looked excellent. It made AAA hitters look pretty foolish.
And Theo mentioned that in his quotes that in my stuff, by the way. He talked about that Nathan has the best feel for a slider that he's had in a couple years.
It looked good. And Joe said that he felt pretty good. He said he felt like he'd lost a couple of ticks off his fastball, but judging by his average velocities over the years and what I saw in Iowa on Saturday and Sunday, I would say he lost 1 to 1.5 ticks on his fastball, and his off-speed stuff looked like it hadn't gone anywhere. So he said he was feeling good, and I finished up the interview by asking him what was in it for him. I said, you're 41, and you've achieved everything you could ever achieve personally on the field. I said, so Joe, is this about a ring? And he responded, for sure, no doubt. That's the biggest motivating factor. And he looked me straight in the eyes and said it like, yeah, of course it is. So I love the fact that you've got a borderline, a future Hall of Famer. And he's saying, I'm out here at 41 busting it because I'm with this team and I want a ring. And that's why I'm here. So I found that really interesting. I'm curious to get your guys' reaction on that.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw them sign him, I was like, oh, well, that's interesting. How old is he even? So I went and checked. I was like, oh, well, this will be interesting. He's going to have to prove, you know, if he can make it. And I've been following him as he's been climbing, you know, from AA to AAA and putting up numbers that, you know, look good, granted against minor leaguers. But hearing that puts it all into perspective, right? You look at the box scores and you look at the I'm looking at his Tennessee picture, and you're like, oh yeah, there's a 41-year-old guy who is trying to make it back up. You know, part of you, your first instinct is to say, oh, that's kind of sad. He's just wants another shot at the spotlight. But it's about the ring, you know, and that's really what it's all about at the end of the day. So knowing that he's got that drive and that focus for that, and his experience, I mean, it goes back to what we just talked about, where you look at this move and go, hey, great. Of course you're going to need bullpen help, and now you've got a guy that could potentially, you know, be a key part of helping them get there.
I think it's really cool, and I think you see this every time the Cubs get really good and it gets close, like you start talking about they have a chance to win a World Series. You start seeing the older guys, the veterans who are ring chasers coming out. Thing that I recall is Maddox signing with the Cubs in 2004. I think there was a couple guys in 2009 that came over that thought they were going to be helping the Cubs win the World Series and talked about it as a motivating factor. So I think you're going to start seeing a lot of those veterans crowding around signing with the Cubs to try and latch on one more time and win a ring. And I think it's because a big part of it is because of how special it would be with the Cubs versus any other team. So I think it's pretty cool that Nathan admitted that to you, that, yeah, this is about chasing a ring. This is a one last shot for him. And I think that leads me to believe he's not protecting anything. He's going to give it his all. And if he's hitting 93, 94 on his fastball and he has good feel on his slider and it looks good, I don't see any reason why he couldn't be your seventh inning guy.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. And from what I saw, it looks like he's got it. So the other guy that I talked to, and this was a very interesting interview, was Brian Mattis. And Mattis is the guy, for those of you that may not know, that was drafted, I think, fourth overall by the Orioles and has a long track record of being an underperformer from what the expectation was, which is a little unfair.
You can say bust. It's okay.
Yeah, and I really hesitate to use that. But first of all, he couldn't have been any more gracious or kind, which I value in a person. He was overwhelmingly kind in the interview. And second of all, I found this interesting. Brian Mattis grew up in Arizona and was a Cubs fan because that was pre-Diamondbacks, and he watched all the games on WGN. He said he and his dad, and his dad actually grew up in Indiana. He and his dad and his brother were huge Cubs fans. So he told me that the reasons that he wanted this opportunity was in the back of his mind. He agreed that he'd always thought about playing for the Cubs, and he said it was very, very special when he got to lace up the blue shoes for the first time, and he said it was a very special moment for him, which I thought was cool to see for a veteran guy. And he said the other reason was that the Cubs told him that they would stretch him out as a starter, and he was very explicit about saying, they did not tell me I would be a starter. They told me that they would stretch me out as a starter, because if you are stretched out, you can do either, sort of like Adam Warren, where he can be either a spot starter for this team or he can transition into the bullpen. He said, I'm going to be ready to go. I'm going to be stretched out here. I'm going to be ready, and I can start or relieve whenever they need me. And I'm willing to do whatever is best for the team. I don't care. I enjoy them both. So I saw him start on Sunday, and he was better than the AAA lineup. And it was a good lineup the Mets put out there, the 51s, the Mets AAA affiliate. But Mattis looked very good. He gave up one homer to Kevin Plawecki. It was a bomb. Other than that, he didn't get touched. And he looked like he could contribute in the bullpen right away as well.
It's interesting hearing when you're describing how gracious he was and how nice he was. I was going through my head was, of course he is. This front office, I feel like they do this time after time. The people they bring in are just like good dudes, right? And it's interesting. I was looking at his numbers because I remember him from when he was, you know, a top prospect with the Orioles. And they did something with him that was very just, you look back and you say, what were you thinking? They drafted him when he was 21 in 2008. They sent him the next year to high A ball, double A, and then they called him up to the big leagues for 8 starts, and then they just kept him up there thinking, hey, he's a good prospect. He'll figure it out. And, you know, who's to say what would have happened if they would have let him kind of climb up the ladder and kind of, you know, evolve on his way to becoming a big leaguer, but good for the Cubs for grabbing a potential arm that could help out. I like the move.
Well, Carlos, this actually that may be more applicable than you even realize, because when I asked him what intrigued him about the Cubs organization, he eventually went into being a starter. The other thing that he said is he wanted to come to Chicago because he wanted to be wanted by an organization. I'll give you the exact quote. He said, I wanted an opportunity to build as a starter, etc., and to be wanted by an organization. You know, to be able to be with the people who want me over here, it's a good feeling. And then he went into, I actually grew up a Cubs fan. So he didn't say it. He was too gracious to say it. But what he was implying is that he was unwanted by his previous organization. And there, you could definitely tell there was some angst there or some hurt. So won't go too deep into the rabbit hole of what the Orioles organization has done to some pitching prospects, but it was clear that there was more there.
Can you think of any other pitching prospects who might have been sort of their careers damaged early on by the Orioles? I can't think of anybody.
Maybe on a future podcast we'll come up with a few.
Well, that's interesting that, like, again, not to give the front office too much credit and lavish too much praise on them, but, you know, they acquired Adam Warren last year, thinking, okay, bullpen help, but also long-term, potentially he'll be a starter. We talked a little bit about it last week. And here's a guy who could contribute to the bullpen, this year, but who knows? I mean, you know, maybe he could be considered for the rotation next year. They just always seem to have a lot of angles covered, and you know, it's just nice to have a front office that you just pretty much have, just give them the keys and say, hey, I trust you. Go do what you got to do.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it is a really interesting idea to think maybe Mattis comes back next year and maybe then he gets his chance in the rotation. Unless there's an injury, I don't really see him getting into the rotation this year. But it's cool that he told Isaac that he's down with whatever. So maybe he comes up and is that lefty reliever in the bullpen. But at the same time, you know, like you said, he's kind of been a career underachiever. So. It's not exactly a guy I would count on right off the bat before seeing anything positive from him at the major league level.
And you know what? I got one more question for you, Isaac, just because I've been following the box scores on all the minor league affiliates for the Cubs. And the Iowa team, I feel like this year, more than any other year, just the depth on the roster alone, like forget about guys that could get called up, come up, come down, but just the depth on it, I feel like there's a lot of players there that I don't know if the right phrase is, could potentially come up and contribute, but just a lot of talent, whether it's AAA talent or big league talent, I just feel like it's pretty stocked compared to previous years. Did you get a sense of anything like that while you were there?
I think they're in a transitional phase where the talent that is there is now truly, in many cases, and not in every case, but in many cases is 4A talent, which is guys that are on the 40-man, guys like Mattis and guys like maybe Pierce Johnson or some, you know, Trevor Cahill's down there rehabbing, guys that can come up and contribute on the big league team if need be at a moment's notice. But it's a transition away from kind of the uber prospects that we've seen. I took a picture there, and it was Javi Baez and Kyle Schwarber and Anthony Rizzo and Chris Bryant and Addison Russell. And all these guys are on this, like, big, you know, placard-type thing. And I took a picture and thought, it is unbelievable the talent that has rolled through this town in the last two or three years. But now they're actually beyond that stage. And the only true – Wilson Contreras is the other one. The only true probably – offensive prospect there right now is Dan Vogelbach. So beyond that, there's a couple of pitching prospects, but beyond that, it is guy after guy after guy after guy. You know, the Tim Fedorovichs of the world that could come up and and contribute if need be. So I do think that the talent is deep, and it's deep in a way of very mature baseball players, and not as deep in true prospects.
Very cool. Yeah, it's very cool that you got to go there and spend some time there, because I don't know. It's just always interesting when you get to that level where you're one step away at a moment's notice. Any one of these guys, maybe not any one of them, but a lot of them could get called up is always interesting. So we'll move on to this is typically where we go into our 60 seconds with a former Cub. Joel is busy, as we mentioned earlier, so we're just going to do 60 seconds of silence.
I thought you wanted to, I had prepared 60 seconds with Bobby Skills. That's all right. It wasn't good anyway. You want to do question of the week?
Let's do it. What do we got this week?
All right. This comes from a second-time emailer, Brad Johnson.
Ooh.
And he says...
Former quarterback? No?
No, I don't think it's the same guy. I'll ask him next time.
Okay.
He says... if the season ended in a month, where the Cubs are have the same roster and the current lead in the division, so let's say, you know, it's September 1st and everything's exactly the same and the Cubs are, whatever, 8 games up, how would you handle the pitching? It seems like a no-brainer that Hamill is the odd man out of the rotation. At what point do you move him to the pen to be ready to contribute in that role for the playoffs, and who makes his starts in the rotation? I'll let you guys, Isaac, I'll start with you then, Carlos. How would you answer this question?
Thanks for the question, Brad, and I think it's an excellent question. I don't think that the team will really have the luxury to move him too early. However, if they've opened up a 12 or 14 game lead or something like that into mid-September, you could maybe see it, and you could maybe see when the rosters expand, a guy like Pierce Johnson or even Mattis come up and take some starts. That was one thought I had about Mattis, is that he may take some of those starts in September if they're running away with the division, God willing. And if that's the case, then you may see Hamill transition in mid-September into the pen. I fully agree with you when you pose the question and saying that Hamill is the guy. Hendricks is right now the three. And then I think Lackey, you know, one of you said he's John freaking Lackey, so he's got to be in there. He's the four. And then, yeah, I think you move Hamill into maybe a middle relief type role, sixth, seventh inning guy, or even a long reliever type role that a right-handed Travis Wood per se. And I think that's exactly what you do. I don't think you have to get too cute with it.
That's a good question. I'm trying to think back. I have a terrible memory, but I'm trying to think back of how frequently teams that are running away with it decide to prep, you know, their fifth starter to kind of work out of the bullpen. I can't think of times I've seen that off the top of my head. But, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, at least Hamill's a veteran, so even if you didn't have time or you didn't have a big enough lead in the division to do something like that, it probably wouldn't be much of an issue. But I do like the idea of getting a guy like Matus, however you pronounce it, or anybody else, a chance to pitch down the stretch and see what they've got. Going back to that idea of continuously thinking of the future, you get the luxury of saying, hey, these games don't necessarily they're not crucial for us to win. We're already in. So let's see what this guy can do, and let's see what that guy can do, and let's limit the innings. You know, maybe that's another idea, is you get Jason Hamill to work, be the long guy, and you say, all right, Jake, John Lester, you guys are pitching, you know, five innings or 90 pitches or whatever to kind of, you know, tone down your workload. And then Jason Hamill goes in there and gets a couple of innings in. That would make sense to me.
Yeah, the way Isaac answered that, I think, is really interesting. That is how pretty much I intended.
Are you saying I got it wrong?
No. Yeah. I think you both have really good points. I think the way Isaac worded it is pretty much how I intended to answer as well. I think you might see a guy like Pierce Johnson or Mattis, somebody who's on the 40-man roster, come up and maybe make one or two starts just as a fifth man. I don't know you're necessarily prepping Hamill out of the bullpen, more just if he's going to be in the pen, that's where he goes. Maybe even just 6 or 7 days before the end of the season, you move him there and give somebody else a spot start that's on your roster. So there's also the thought that, like last year with Dan Heron, maybe the Cubs roll into the playoffs and they have as many guys as they want in their bullpen. Let's say Mattis is there and he's doing well, and so is Joe Nathan and CJ Edwards and on and on. And you just feel like you've got your four starters in Arrieta, Lester, Hendricks, and Lackey, and Jason Hamill's just odd man out, and he's not on the postseason roster. So I think that might be a likely scenario too, but if Hamill is in the pen, I don't see it out of the realm of possibility that they give him a couple appearances before the end of the year.
Somebody on Twitter can yell at me if I'm wrong here, but didn't the Mets do that last year with Bartolo Colon? I mean, he was their five all year, and he ended up coming out of the pen in the playoffs.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, you might be right on that.
Gosh, I feel so bad for Jason Hamill. Like,
I know
the numbers he's put up with the Cubs, and it's just like he's the throwaway guy just because everybody else has pitched so well. It's crazy.
But look, I think that the possibility Ryan said of he might find himself off the playoff roster, that's a real possibility. But I also think it's a real possibility that he's the right-handed counterpart to Travis Wood. And then if you do have a blow up somewhere in there, Hamill could be very, very important to come in and pitch four innings or something like that in the middle of the game, just to mop up innings and save your bullpen for the next game. So I do think there's still a role there, most likely, for him, even if he is the odd man out.
Well, and something to kind of add on to that, in the playoffs, more than any other time, specifically because one game means so much more in the postseason than it does in the regular season.
Right.
If you have a guy who comes out and can't throw strikes, let's say Kyle Hendricks can't throw any strikes in the first inning of a game, and he struggles,
just chuckled.
Yeah, it struggles to get through one inning, and he's obviously got no control. And he gets you through one inning, maybe he only gives up one or two runs, and keeps you in the game for that inning, and comes out and walks the first batter of the second inning. If it's the postseason, he's out of the game, and you're bringing in somebody else. So having a guy like Hamill could be very beneficial if you think I mean, it seems like every single year in the postseason, some team has a game where they bring somebody out of the pen who pitches four or five really good innings and gets you through a tough game. So, yeah, I could definitely see him making the roster just for that specific role.
Well, do we think the Cubs are going to exercise that option next year?
Definitely. Yeah, I think it's only $9 million, isn't it?
I think it's 10, but still, yeah. I mean, because I was just thinking, if you're going to leave him off the roster, maybe this is one of those file it under crazy ideas, but maybe you trade him away, try to get something for him.
Yeah, it's too much debt.
That's what I've been kind of thinking on as well. Is I think crazy, if you do pick up that option, I think, yeah, you probably are trading him. I don't think he's pitching bad enough. You know, obviously, he's not pitching bad at all. But my thought before the season was you either pick up the option and trade him because he has value, or you don't pick up the option because he was pitching too poorly.
Mm.
I think you pick up the option at this point and you shop him, and somebody out there is going to give you something for a guy like Hamill on a $9 million one-year deal. So yeah. I think you try and improve either from within, maybe putting Adam Warren in that role, or maybe go out and try and make a trade for a starting pitcher like one of the guys from Tampa Bay or something like that. So yeah, I would say, me personally, I think there's a 70% chance that Jason Hamill's not on the roster next season.
That's interesting. Yeah, I just looked it up. It's effectively an $8 million decision because it's a $10 million option, but there's a $2 million buyout, so there's a delta of $8 million. So I think that's an easy yes to pick it up. But it's an interesting thought to think about trading him, which it's definitely some corresponding moves would have to happen. I don't think they've probably seen enough out of Adam Warren to trade Jason Hamill yet out of the rotation. I still have some questions about the straightness of his fastball, which I know, Ryan, you've touched on a lot. But, I think they'll definitely pick it up, and then we'll see how the offseason progresses from there.
Yeah, if they kept Fowler, in terms of, like, even with the depth that we felt they had in the outfield, it probably doesn't make sense to get rid of him just now. But moving on to our at-bat of the week, I'm going to play a new game with this one, and I've written down the player of an at-bat that I think could be could be one that I would have picked. So I'm going to write that down, and then I'm going to hand it over to Isaac and see what he's got for us this week.
Well, it's actually the same player twice. He gets two at-bats because before last night, Anthony Rizzo clearly had the at-bat of the week. Granted, there was a small sample, because I thought that his two-run double off of Yu Darvish on Saturday was an absolutely huge hit, because Darvish was absolutely untouchable in that game and had struck out, somebody help me, 10 through 4 innings or something of that nature. And then Rizzo hooking that double with two strikes down the line was really a huge game-changing play. However, he also had probably the at-bat of the year last night off left-hander Steven Matz. In the bottom of the third inning, the Cubs were behind 3-0, and there was two men on for Anthony Rizzo. He took two balls from Steven Matz, who, by the way, side note, has the easiest 95-mile-per-hour gas I have ever seen in my life, because it looks like he's throwing 88, and he's actually throwing 95, and it's just utterly unbelievable. But he went to 2-0, and then he fouled off a changeup and took a called strike to get to 2-2, and then proceeded to see curveball, sinker, slider, sinker, sinker, and fouled off all five of them to stay at 2-2. The 10th pitch, Matz decided to change it up and throw a changeup, but it hung in the top of the zone, and Anthony Rizzo hit it about 430 feet for a three-run home run, which was the game-winning home run in the third inning. And it really just set the tone for the game. It knocked out Matz, who was pitching well. It was kind of classic Rizzo fighting off pitch after pitch after pitch after pitch and then waiting for the one he could actually hit and blasting it into the sand. So your at-bat of the week, Anthony Rizzo, three-run home run off Steven Matz last night.
Yeah, I was wrong.
Are you serious?
I was, you know what, the game I was watching where I noted this, I don't think I was watching that Rizzo game, or at least I didn't watch all those at-bats, was on Monday when David Ross hit a sacrifice fly.
Are you being serious?
A 10-pitch, 3-run home run off a lefty is not good enough for you.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing when you said that you were writing. When you said you were writing that down, my first thought was, it has to be the Anthony Rizzo home run last night. That can't be anything else.
He was down 1-2. Well, let me break down the data process.
Oh, Carlos, that's such a Carlos thing. That's the most obvious at-bat of the week we've ever had.
Oh, I thought it might be a David Ross sack fly.
David Ross is coming around, man. It was 2 outs, runner at third. He was down 1-2, fouled off a nasty curveball, got another couple balls, pushed it to 3-2, fouled off another pitch, and then he got a sacrifice fly. I was very into that moment. It must have been. That was a huge run, man. 3-0 lead and 4-0 lead, that's a totally different ballgame.
You didn't get sweets much as a kid, did you?
We didn't get the TV very much.
I'm pretty sure you probably misspoke, but if not, that's really impressive that he had a sack fly with 2 outs.
Oh. Shut up, Ryan. Incredible. Here has a little typo. That's what it is.
Yeah. So just to make sure our fans or colleagues or whatever he is, I don't know, are happy, Full Count Tommy says hello to all of our dedicated listeners on Twitter. This is interactive podcasting.
Yeah. Nice. I think Isaac just saw that as he was talking, I was not paying attention and scrolling Twitter and saw that he had tweeted at Full Count Tommy 42 seconds prior, and that tipped me off that he was not paying attention to what I was saying and was tweeting.
Does that surprise you?
So I tweeted him and said, while he was talking about the at-bat of the week, and said, stop tweeting while I'm talking to you.
To meet Full Count Tommy last week in person, that was nice.
How was that?
It was good.
Oh, someone shot Carlos.
Just texting to see if anybody was tweeting me, but no luck. Maybe David Ross giving me props for mentioning his at-bat of the week.
Yeah, I got to spend a little face time with Carlos and Joel as well, and met Full Count Tommy, although I'd met him a couple of the CubsCon meetups before, and saw some old faces, hung out with Brett Taylor and Kat, and saw her there, and met Clarissa from the BP Wrigleyville site for the first time. She was very cool. So,
yeah. And actually, you know what I was thinking, and I'm curious for the fans out there, for people that are listening to this and listen to us every week. We know you're out there. We get some of the emails. We see the stats. If there's any interest in actually meeting this group. And talking to us in person, let us know, because we've kind of thrown some ideas around on you know, what we could do to kind of, I don't know, stuff we could do with the podcast to kind of interact with people. If there's any interest in that, shoot us an email or hit us up on Twitter. We'd love to give you what you want and get to meet some of you.
Yeah, I think that'd be really cool, being able to get together either at a Cubs game or maybe at an event or you know, creating something at a bar or, you know, I don't know, just kind of spitballing ideas. But if any listeners have ideas or thoughts on that, or even just want to encourage something like that, a meetup where, you know, you can show up and we've got, you know, $4 beers and free appetizers or something like that, just reach out, let us know. We'd be interested in doing that if we think there would be more than just four of us there.
Yeah, I think we probably have to forewarn you, though, that Sarah Spain and her sort of calling us out for being total nerds and losers and not doing too well with the ladies was totally and utterly accurate, even though she doesn't really know us that well. So don't get your hopes up too high. That's all I'm saying.
I think when she got on the podcast and saw all four of us and our just all of us just sitting there and talking to her, I think she just knew immediately. She could call us out.
These guys look back.
Yeah. But hey, maybe if we do an event, maybe we could get Sarah there. What do you think?
Yeah. We might actually get some fans there then if we did that.
We'll have Joel reach out.
Good stuff, guys.
All right. Well, we'll see you guys next week. And good night.
Night, guys.
Night, everybody.